Good afternoon to you all. Welcome back after a lovely, nice winter. It wasn't as cold as it should have been or could have been. So we didn't have too much snow, plenty of rain. Isn't it nice? Wonderful. Nice, lovely, dark weather, rainy weather. So welcome from that. We'll begin with a little meditation, then we'll proceed with the talk. Letting go of all the tension from the muscles of the body. Relaxing my feet, my legs, my stomach and chest. Relaxing my shoulders, relaxing my neck and face and forehead, I let a wave of relaxation flow through the body, and now in this relaxed state, I turn my attention inwards. Letting go of all thoughts of the past and the future. I bring the mind to focus on the present moment, sitting here in this room, on this chair. I begin my inner journey, feeling the flow of energy throughout the body, in the eyes of the mind I see pure white light flowing throughout the body. The life force, giving life to this body, giving consciousness to this brain. And I feel this energy concentrating. Through the body and concentrating in the center of the brain, the energy gets concentrated into a point of light. A spark of consciousness. The soul, the spirit,
that energy which was before this body was, that which will be after this body is no more. Just a spark of light. I feel light. I experience as though this physical world and this physical body has disappeared from my awareness. All that remains is light. I see myself as just a sparkling star. Consciousness of my eternal self, the soul. I take my awareness beyond the limits of this physical world, beyond the earth, beyond the moon, beyond the sun, beyond the stars, beyond the limits of space and time. Blissful silence, lost in light, feeling light, united with the Supreme, I feel, I experience the deep, blissful silence of the inner self. And holding on to the silence, is deep, comforting peace. I allow myself, my awareness, to return back to this world of matter, this world of action and reaction. Back to the world of this body. And I once again find myself seated in the center of the ring, spreading the light of life throughout the brain and the body, looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears. I, the eternal spirit within, a speck of light, a sparkling star, silent and peaceful. Peace, my original nature. Peace, my only. Please come, there's a chair here in the front. Last come, first served. That's a nice principle, right? So welcome again. Very nice to see you all. So, we begin this month, as Sonia already mentioned, with some very central concepts of the philosophy of Raja Yoga. Very central concepts because they are actually a very important part of the practice of the philosophy. One is the philosophy as we understand the philosophy, the knowledge, the intellectual insight. The other is the practice. Yoga, we say yoga, many of you know, yoga is union. Yoga, the word yoga means union. Some sort of a connection, union, right? So people sit to practice yoga. One way of practicing yoga is people practice yoga in a physical way, where you sit in a certain posture, you try to discipline the body, and through the discipline of the body, the mind gets slightly disciplined, become quiet. You can concentrate. That is one way of practicing it. In Raja Yoga, we don't do that. The way we try to create union, and what is the union we try to create? The aim of Raja Yoga, the ultimate aim of the philosophy of Raja Yoga, is to create a union with our deepest, innermost self. That's the union we aim at. Our deepest, innermost self, which means the deepest, innermost values that we all hold. That is the self, the deepest, innermost values that we all hold. And these values are not different from any other human being in the world. The deepest, innermost values that we all hold, for example, love. Today we will speak a lot about love. Love. Everyone values love. That is one of the deepest, innermost values of the human soul. Yoga means being united with the self. And if the self has the value of love as its deepest, innermost value, then yoga is union with love, means being united with love, means experiencing love, means others should also be able to experience love from us. The love is contagious. It is contagious, you know, it spreads.
So yoga is that. Union with the self, union with our innermost values. And this union is not a union of isolation. It is not something we practice only by sitting by ourselves and meditating. Yes, that is important because we are not used to going so deep within ourselves to connect with that innermost experience of love, which is very different from the other experience of love we have in relationships or in other ways. It is very different. We are not used to going in that deep and experiencing that. And therefore, we take our time to sit in meditation. But through the practice of meditation, we practice going deep inside and connecting with that experience of inner love. But that is not enough. That is not enough for me to be convinced that that is my value. I need to bring it out and express and experience it in activity, in action, in relationships, in this world outside. When I am able to do that, then I will be convinced it's my value. And that is the practice of the philosophy. And that's the challenging part. Easy to sit by myself and feel love. That's easy. That also requires some practice, but it's still easier. Right? Going out there and expressing love. And what does it mean to express love? That is what we will speak about today. What does it mean to express love? When there are challenges around us, when people are blaming us, people are insulting us, how do I experience love there? That's the challenge. When I'm able to do that, then I'm convinced it's my value. Otherwise, it remains an intellectual philosophy. So Raj Yoga, the way we practice it, Raj Yoga is not just an intellectual philosophy. It's a practice. Which means, I sit, of course, I take out time to be united with the self, but the aim is to remain united with the self, which means to remain united with these values. In practice, in activity, in relationship. That's the aim that we have. Today we will speak about loneliness. Now from love we go to loneliness, you see. That's a nice way. And in fact, the first four talks that we will have in the season, we will focus on these challenges we face in our daily lives, right? For example, loneliness. Then we have challenges of deciding. We know sometimes something is right for us, but we are unable to take that step and decide and put it into action. The challenge of confusion that we face many times, what do I need to do in life? What should I do? Which career should I pursue? Which job should I apply for when we have the choice? Now we don't have much of a choice. So then, in this world with so many challenges and difficulties and, you know, profit margins thinning and all that, we don't have much of a choice. And we also have then to decide, do I just go and take up any job that is available? There is another confusion there. In Denmark, people can afford to have that confusion. You see, it's a welfare state. So you still have your ekasa and all. So for some time, it's okay. You can sit and think about it. In many places, people cannot sit and think about it. They just have to take whatever comes in front of them. That sometimes creates conflict. How do you deal with such conflicts? Conflicts of values sometimes. How do you deal with such conflicts? We experience them in relationships. So these are some of the things we will focus on. And we will try and see how certain central concepts of the practice of Raj Yoga, which we speak of as the eight powers. It's a part of the Raj Yoga course. We have now time to go into greater depth into these eight powers. Today we take up two of these powers, the first two powers. Then the next session we take up other powers and then so on and so forth. But today we will take it up. And we will try and look at loneliness. We speak very often spiritually in the philosophy of Raj Yoga as the power to withdraw. How is that a power? Because in loneliness, people withdraw. Don't they? And if you're lonely, you have withdrawn. How can withdrawal be a power? What do we mean by that? We will try and look at that today. Firstly, what is loneliness? Anyone here who has never experienced loneliness? Please. No one? Okay. Nice. So we all experience loneliness. Okay. So what is loneliness? How would you explain loneliness? terrible thing to be speaking about on a dark, windy winter evening. Right? People say winter depression. Is there such a thing called winter depression?
Yeah.
Yes. There's lots of talk on that. Not much research supports that. There's lots of talk on that. It's a part of popular psychology. Weather influences. Not much research supports that weather influences mood. It's something else happening. But let's not get into that today. Let's get into something even better, that's loneliness. So how would you explain loneliness? What is the experience of loneliness? When you experience loneliness, what do you feel? What do we feel? Yes?
Separate.
Separate.
Yeah.
Yeah, liberation is another thing. Okay, sorry, I heard it wrong. I'm growing deaf, you know. Okay, so separation. We feel a sense of separation. Separation from what? Separation, yes. Separation from what?
From connecting with other people in a way that is satisfying.
This lack of connectedness, separation, lack of connectedness with other people in a way that is satisfying. We feel this. It's a very common experience. We all have this experience, of course. It's a sense of, you could say, separation or a lack of connectedness. Yes, more or less, can we? Will we all agree that it's something like that? The sense of separation, lack of connectedness, we feel that in the experience. Why is this problematic? What do we feel the lack of here? Lack of connectedness, yes, but what is it fundamentally that we are feeling a lack of?
Love.
Love. Is it not? It's the lack of love. Loneliness is the absence of love. The love we have learned to associate in our connectedness, in our relationships. There has been some very interesting research in psychology on loneliness. Now I'm going to make things very, very heavy. So, you know, then you feel very miserable. Then we can try and feel. So when you rock bottom, then the only place to go up is up, right? You can't go down any further. No, but there is some very interesting research on loneliness, right? And also some very interesting research on how people can get out of loneliness. What is the treatment for loneliness? Psychologically, what is the treatment for loneliness? And then we try and see spiritually, how do we address the issue of loneliness? Can we address it? How do you address it? Where can spirituality take us? Where psychology stops? Can we go deeper? There are some interesting ways of dealing with loneliness, even in psychology and therapy. Very nice ways. Right? We'll speak about that. And then we'll see how we can go further through spirituality and the practice of spiritual principles. But loneliness has been connected quite a lot to various forms of well-being or the lack of well-being. And some very interesting ways, very interesting associations or correlations we have found. One is to do with, say, our physical health, right? Interestingly, loneliness seems to be associated with sleep disturbance. People who experience loneliness take a longer time falling asleep, or they wake up and are unable to go back to sleep. These various forms of sleep disturbances they have. Very interestingly, it has also been related to high blood pressure. People who report high blood pressure, also, many of them also tend to experience more loneliness, or people who have higher levels of loneliness experience higher blood pressure. Interesting. It has also been related to cardiovascular diseases. Very interestingly, it has also been related to cancer. People who experience higher levels of loneliness tend to be more susceptible, or tend to have or report various forms of cancer. And there is one study, it is a bit controversial because, you know, it's not very, very certain, but there seem to be some indications that people who try to hide their loneliness from the world are more prone to diseases like cancer. Not just experiencing loneliness, but trying to hide the loneliness. It's like you're feeling something, but you're forcing yourself not to express what you're feeling. A terrible war going on inside, right? That creates a lot of stress. We call it surface acting. It's surface acting. You're feeling something inside. Like, for example, in some jobs, people have to do surface acting. For example, an air hostess. You have to be nice to customers. Of course, in many airlines, it's not bothering now. That's a different story. But the way they are trained, you have to be nice to customers. You also have, so even if the customer is very, very nasty, you're still smiling. Yes, sir, let me help you and all that stuff. But like surface, you're feeling something else inside, but you're forced to express something else outside. People who work in call centers where all these customers call to complain, they experience a lot of this kind of a stress, surface acting. And we know that's not so good for the self. But here again, we see people who feel lonely, but are hiding it from the world, have more problems because of the stress that they experience. So it's a problem, we know that. It also has social issues, social implications, because people who experience loneliness are also more prone to antisocial and destructive behaviors. They feel more anger and resentment. And one way that the anger and resentment comes out is this destructive antisocial behavior. And also destructive behavior towards the self. So if we go into the psychological, more self-related issues of loneliness, we find that people who experience loneliness, obviously, depression and loneliness go very well together. They experience more depression. Also, higher levels of alcoholism. We find in these people, they are more prone to committing suicide. So we have a lot of aspects. It's not just, you know, you feel lonely by yourself, but it has a lot of, it creates a lot of damage on the self, it creates damage on the world, it creates damage on the body. It has various implications. But why do we feel lonely? Let's try and look at that. Why do we feel lonely? Especially, you know, I work quite a bit with foreigners, with immigrants who come to Denmark, living here, working here. Sometimes they have, many of them have, not all of them, but many of them do have this issue of loneliness. They face this issue of loneliness. Working with cross-cultural management, sometimes you also work with Danish managers who've been based in foreign countries. Many times they experience the same problem. This is something people experience. When they cross their national borders, wherever they are, going into another country, or other people coming into another country, very frequently you have this experience of loneliness. That is one experience of loneliness. We will speak about that as well. Culture-specific loneliness, related to culture. And the other experience of loneliness is, of course, I can be in what I call my culture, and I can still feel lonely. So this lack of connectedness, separation. Sometimes people are sitting with a group of people, they feel lonely. It is very different from being alone. Loneliness is not the same as solitude. I can experience solitude when I am with 100 people, but that's a different experience. Solitude is different. Loneliness is different. We need solitude sometimes, right? Loneliness, separation, I'm unable to feel this connectedness. Why? What happened? What makes us feel lonely? It's separatedness. Yes?
If we don't feel understood and respected.
We don't feel. So we are feeling this. You're saying we don't feel understood. We don't feel respected. So why should that be a problem?
It's a kind of separation from oneself.
Separation from oneself. What are the other experiences? Why should that, yes?
I notice for myself, sometimes when I have are too busy, I forget to do something good for myself,
yeah,
or for others. And only do what you also told there, so to be polite to customers and so on. and work too much, then I forget myself, and then I feel lonely, even if I have a family or people around me. But if I take, sometimes when I have, when say, in summer vacations, when I have a lot of time, I can go and enjoy the summer and go and help some people and do some things because I have time now, then I don't feel lonely. But sometimes when I...
Very interesting.
Yes.
So what you said about forgetting the self, forgetting the self, you're also speaking about that.
Yes.
I somehow, with I sort of lose touch with myself, separate myself from myself, in some way, and then I end up feeling lonely.
Something where if I don't respect my own needs also.
Yes.
I think often it is also expectations that are wrong, which I may have.
I have certain expectations. What kind of expectations, for example, maybe what she spoke about having respect, some respect from others or some love from others. Let's try and write these down. So one is this desire or expectation I have from others. This is something that we, you know, I desire others to express love and respect for me. And perhaps this is also connected to this experience of forgetting the self or sort of losing in touch with the self. What is the self? We will speak about that as well. There is also a very interesting thing when we look at people, especially people who cross cultures, and not necessarily cultures. And when I say cultures, it's not necessarily national cultures. It could also be a place culture, family culture, for example. As we are being brought up in a certain culture, we learn to express love and respect. Respect, in a way, is an expression of love. In certain ways. So we don't just desire or expect love and respect, or whatever else. We also desire and expect the expression of love and respect in a certain way. We're used to that. We've been brought up with that. We're used to expression in a certain way. So along with this desire, there also seems to be an attachment to, say, specific expressions of love. And this, you know, we sort of, we learn this. We learn, or in other words, this is the word we have been using quite often, introject. Introject, for those who don't know this word, is we take an external reality into the self and we call it ours. Because we have been taught that reality. So certain values, for example, I take it within myself and I call it mine. They are my values because I have been rewarded for those, for behaving in that way or holding those attitudes. This is what we call introjection. So for let me explain this and clarify this by giving some examples, right? So especially we see this very clearly when we're looking at national cultures, and that's something I work with a little bit professionally, so one can see that very clearly. For example, foreigners coming to Denmark, right? They come in here. I'll begin first with an example of one of my friends who moved to the America, to the United States, to America. A colleague of mine who was working with me in an organization before I came to Denmark. So he's an American citizen. He's been living in America for many, many years. And then, of course, but he's not originally from America. He's originally from India. He moved as a student, then he sort of settled down there. And he was sharing his experience with me of this experience of separation and loneliness. So he said, when I first went there, initially everything was very interesting. And so you have this, call it a culture curve. You know, initially you go to different, everything is new and exciting and everything is very nice and good. With time, reality hits you in different ways. So he said, after some time, I started feeling, you know, I didn't belong here. And everything that I saw was so different, I could not connect. And as I could not connect, I felt, I don't belong, in the sense of separation. And of course then, you know, you're not motivated to work and all that. So one of the things that he sort of noticed, apparently, when he went there was, after some time, he felt that these people don't love as much as
We Indians love. The Americans don't have so much love as we Indians have. That was his understanding. So then, of course, I asked him, so why did you feel like that? And he gave some very interesting examples. Of course, then he realized that was silly later on. By himself, he realized that. He didn't need me. That was nice. So he said that so he noticed many things around in the United States. One of the things he noticed was children moved out from their parents' house very early. In Denmark, they move out even earlier. But in America, they do move out quite early. So 18, you know, they're out. Usually. Of course, there are some who stay for longer with their parents. But generally, the trend was that people move out. And then not just that, he noticed that many of his colleagues who were parents expected their children to move out when they reached that certain age. That for him was terrible. How can you expect your children to move out? Don't you love your children? Because he comes from a certain culture where there is a different reality. Parents expect their children to go on staying with them for the rest of their life, even after they're married. Not all parents, again, you know, but generally speaking, at least those days, I'm speaking about 20 years ago, because my colleague was quite old, an elderly person. So even now, but certainly then, the expectation was that children grow up, they continue to live with their parents, especially the son. The daughter goes and then stays with her in-laws, right? Because she's married to that guy. But then the other, they live. So now he sees his colleagues expecting his children to move out. And he says, don't they love their children? So his first reaction was, these are very strange people. They don't love their children. And then he, after some time, he sat and he challenged himself. Very intelligent guy, of course. Challenged himself, how can it be? How can even animals, I mean, you see them, they love their children. They're willing to do so much for their children. But Americans, they are worse than animals. They don't love their children at all. How can that be true? That's ridiculous. It can't be true. It's the nature of a being, a living being, an animal, any form, to take care of its children. Then why is it that in this place people expect the children to move out? Then he sort of, even speaking to people, he asked his colleagues, and then he realized something very, very deep and very, very important. There, in order to survive and live in their society, people need to be independent. And one way of becoming independent is learning to live on your own. You need to go out there, and that's when you're respected by others. That's when you're able to find the success that you need, because that's the expectation of the whole society. And therefore, it becomes a national value. And I understand, to survive in the society, to get success in the society, I need to follow this particular value. And so, parents want their children to succeed and survive. And so they start communicating these values to these children. And children take these values into themselves. They introject, in other words, these values into themselves. They become a part of who they believe they are. They grow up and they pass it on to their children. They grow up and they pass it on to their children. It becomes a national culture. Because you start from the way back in America. How did the American nation shape up? All these immigrants from different parts of the world end up in this big, huge country, so many resources, huge land. You can't sit around, wait for each other to come. No, you can't. You have to go take initiative, move out. That's how you exploit nature. Whatever you do, you gain your success. You survive, basically. That's the way you survive, initially. And what helps us in surviving becomes important. It becomes a value over time. And then it becomes very deeply entrenched in the human mind. So he understood. In America, in India, what do? Old culture. People have been living there. Used to be a very rich country. Right? What do? We have almost all the things available for you. Ancient times, ancient India, very, very rich. All facilities are there. What do? Sit around, talk to each other, hang around, be together as a family, spend the rest of your life sitting and talking, nothing else to do. It becomes a part of the culture. Even later when things change, because the traditions are very old, things changed, India became poor, you know, all these problems. Even then, we hang on, because the assumption that this is what will give us security. It sort of holds. It passes on generation to generation. And so he understood the same value of love the same value of love is being expressed differently. And because I am attached to my own expressions, which I have learned from my background, family background, cultural background, whatever background it is, I have learned an expression of love in my own way. I hold on to that. I don't just hold on to that. I expect that from others. And I don't get it. I feel a sense of separation and disconnectedness. So the sense of loneliness, one is, of course, this desire from others. The desire, you could say, the desire to receive love and respect from others, but also the desire to receive it in a particular way. I don't get it. I feel disconnected. I feel hurt, especially in close relationships. I feel, and these need not be just national cultures. It can even be personalities. Personalities are different. Today we will speak about introversion, extroversion, for example, as one of the difference, one of the differences between people. That can also become a reason for the conflict and loneliness, the sense of separation. Yeah? For example, let's take the a couple. The wife is, say, extroverted. The husband is introverted. Introverted, for the beginning, quiet. Extroverted, for the moment, we will describe it as someone who is more outgoing, right? We'll go into it deeper before. Later, sorry. So they go off for a vacation. They have a very nice time, and they come back. They had a great time. Now, the wife, who is an extrovert, what would you want to do? What would an extroverted person want to do after having had a great time?
Go out and tell to the friends.
Tell, speak, blah, 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 blah. All the time you speak and you share your experiences. And what would the introverted person want to do after having had a great time?
Be alone.
Be alone, think, reflect. That was very nice. So now, these two people are sitting together and the wife goes on, blah, blah, blah. She says to her husband, we had such a nice time. We went there. Don't you think that place was very nice? And that man was so good, wasn't it? But I was there. Why is she talking to me about it? And she goes on and on. And he's becoming more and more quiet because he feels, you know, he wants to sit by himself and think and reflect and take it in. And she goes on, blah, blah, blah. And then after some time, she says, why aren't you saying anything? You should say something to me. He says, what is there to say? Why don't you stop speaking? She gets hurt because he's asked her to stop speaking. She gets hurt because he's not giving attention to her and speaking to her. Personality differences. The culture of every individual, which is also, we refer to it as personality, is also different. I feel the sense of separation because I'm used to certain things myself. I know a couple friends of mine, they went on a nice vacation to Rome, celebrating their wedding anniversary. Been together for many years. See, it's a big achievement in this world nowadays. Being together for many years. They go to Rome to celebrate their anniversary. They're sitting outside a restaurant after having had a great day. And the wife is typically extrovert. Husband is typical introvert, right? So she's speaking out of everything. And this guy is very quiet. After some time, she says, is everything okay? He says, yeah. That's it. No answer. Is the food okay? Yeah. Are you comfortable? Yeah. Don't you like the restaurant? No, it's good. Because he's sort of lost in his own inner world, you see. And she's going on speaking. After some time, she starts panicking. Did I do something wrong? She asks, are you upset? No. And she starts panicking. He's not even saying that he's upset. But of course he's upset because he's not saying anything, right? And she starts imagining, what's happening? He says, he must have got bored with me. After so many years of marriage, you know, he must have got, is there another woman? 2 weeks ago, he took the phone into the room. A phone call came and he took the phone into the room, away from me. Is he speaking to another woman? She starts panicking. Then she starts getting angry. Then she shouts at him. Then he shouts at her. And they destroy a very nice time that they were having together. Separation. Feeling of separation. Because of the inability to understand the differences and different ways in which people express love, respect, because of our own desire. Where does this desire come from?
In Buddhism, they say the root of suffering is the attachment to desire. Desire and attachment, two of the roots of suffering. One is attachment. So in this case, attachment to expressions, unique expressions of love. The other is this desire to get something from others. We relate this now. This desire to take from the world, we say, stimulation from the external world that we all seek is related to the attitude of what we speak about as extraversion. So, now this is slightly different from the personality type of extraversion, who we call extroverts. Generally in the world when people speak about extroverts and introverts, popular psychology, what is there in the popular magazines, popular understanding. Who is an extrovert? Let me ask you. Who is an extrovert? Who would you call an extrovert? That one? Yes? Speak something. Yeah, see, that is not at all the understanding of extroversion. Mm. It has nothing to do with success. But yet we do understand it in that way. But yes, you said outgoing.
When you make a job, you know, when you apply for jobs, they're also looking in some tests from an extrovert.
It does sometimes happen, yes. Others? Anything else? How would you guess?
Maybe people who get in touch with themselves by speaking to others.
People who get in touch with themselves by speaking to others. Interesting definition. But there is certainly there is an explanation for that related to what you have mentioned. What about introversion? Who is an introvert? How would you describe an introvert?
A person that feels like they recharge better alone or reading a book.
The actual definition, even in psychology, is not so much about being successful or not being successful. It is about the focus of attention. The extrovert's attention is focused on the world outside. There is a focus of attention on the world outside. Why? Because the extrovert is seeking stimulation from the world outside. The introvert's attention is more focused on the world within. Why? Because that person is seeking more stimulation from the world within. That is really the only fundamental difference. And then this difference can be manifested in these behaviors. So the extrovert is more likely to be outgoing, wanting to party, for example, meet lots of people. Why? Because that's how the person is getting their inspiration, their stimulation. As you said, perhaps, that brings them in touch with these energies. They are getting their energy from the outer world. The introvert is more quiet and reflective, typically, because the person is gathering their stimulation, their energy, their inspiration from the inner world. That's really the only difference. This is the psychological definition. In the philosophy of Raj Yoga, the spiritual understanding that we have, we go deeper. So the understanding is that this is fundamentally an attitude. And all of us, by the way, all of us carry the attitude of extroversion. We also carry the attitude of introversion. We all do turn inwards and we all do turn outwards. We all engage with the world. And we also like some time off for ourselves so that we can go deeper and connect with our inner self. But what do we mean by the inner self? At one level, we say things we like to do. Spend time reading a book, watch television, or just spend time on your own, doing things that you like, engaging in some hobby, going for a walk, finding stimulation in more solitary activities. In a spiritual understanding, we say, even that can be extroversion because I'm still seeking stimulation from the outside world. I'm still seeking stimulation from certain activities that I would like to do by myself. A spiritual understanding is I go deeper and connect with something far deeper within myself because doing those activities
will not necessarily give me the experience of love, which is behind the experience of loneliness and separation. Engaging in those activities by themselves will help me gather my energy, but they will not necessarily give me the experience of love. And so here we say introversion, from a spiritual perspective, is not just spending time by yourself. Introversion from a spiritual perspective is going deep within the self, because that kind of introversion can also be an escape from reality. I find the challenges of facing the world difficult, interacting with people, adjusting to people difficult. I escape into my own world and I can tell myself, oh, I'm just happy being by myself. But that being by myself can be an escape. Need not be, but it can be. Going out there, engaging with the world, partying, etc., etc., can also be an escape from the challenges of being by myself and looking at my inner reality. Need not be, but it can be. Both these things can be escapes. From a spiritual perspective, we say, it is not enough that I do things by yourself, because love is something I feel, but love is also something that is deeply, by its very nature, it is in relation. We can express it. Without that, the experience of loneliness will still be there. So there is a lot of very interesting research on how extroverts, for example, the extroverted attitude displays itself. Research shows extroverts dress themselves a little differently than introverts. The way they decorate their office table is different. The way they decorate their offices is quite different. Very interesting. So, for example, extroverted attitude involves having more decorative pieces of clothing. Why? Attract attention. Why? Because I invite interaction. I attract attention, invite interaction, because through the interaction I feel my stimulation. Introverted dressing is more practical and comfortable, because they're not so much interested in inviting interaction. An extrovert is more likely to keep a dish of sweets and toffees or chocolates on their table, because people can come, take, you invite, you start speaking and seeking interaction. They tend to decorate their offices more and make it more comfortable and inviting. Come in, doors are open more often. So people come in, interact, because I'm seeking that interaction from the external world. And as long as I'm getting that, it's fine. But when I don't get it, it becomes a problem. Right? So this is the extroverted attitude. From a spiritual perspective, we say, if I have the inner attitude of taking anything from the world, this is an extroverted attitude. Especially the experience of love. The attitude... Oh, how do you say attitude in Danish?
Attitude.
No. You also say attitude. Okay. You just make it a soft D.
Attitude.
Okay, attitude. So we say the attitude consists of three elements, and this is important to understand. The attitude consists of three elements. One is the behavioral element. The other is the affective or the emotional element. And the third is the cognitive element. So, for example, one is the behavior. An extroverted attitude displays in the behavioral tendency of being more outgoing, interacting more, going to more parties, for example, having a large circle of friends. This is my natural tendency. That's the behavioral expression. And that behavior is coming from the experience of effect, what I feel when I'm with these people. When I'm with a lot of people, I feel good. There is an effect. For an introvert, if I'm with people for a long period of time, I feel drained, I feel empty, I feel I lack energy. And therefore, I tend to be more reserved. Because when I'm with a lot of people, I feel the energy drained from me. Extrovert, when I'm with a lot of people, I feel energetic, and therefore I'm with people. And this effect is being guided by a cognition or a belief. That is an assumption. I believe being with people, for example, will give me energy. I believe being with people will drain me from the energy. This is a belief I have developed. This is a belief I have developed. And that belief, this cognition, and of course, all these things come from my experience. Experience observing others, experience observing myself, or my own experiences with life. So, for example, I have had the experience that when I am with people, I receive something from people. When I receive something from people, I experience this love, I feel the sense of connectedness. There is a deep belief framed by experience that gives birth to desire. I want to be in that context. You were saying something?
Yeah, but don't you think that what you call experience now is already in a human being?
Very true.
As genes? Is
you could also say that. Yeah, it's something we carry with us.
Yes.
Yeah. The question, we also have research on that that shows that about 50% of the experience of loneliness can be connected to biology. For example, studies on identical twins, for example, right? But the other close to 50% is not based on that. So there is still that part which we can change. And the thing is, we carry certain assumptions of getting something from the outside world which makes us in a way dependent, and we seek this again and again. And this is the extroverted attitude that we speak about in spirituality. That is, I believe the world will fill me up. And again, I go out there into the world with the desire to get something from the world, especially the expectation of love. I also go again and again into the world with my attachment to various ways of expressing love, shaped by, say, culture or my family history. And when I don't get that, I feel lonely, separate. So what is the answer? The answer spiritually is these two powers that we will speak about too briefly. This is from the experience of the extroverted attitude, I go into the experience of the introverted attitude, which means basically here I use two powers. One is the power to withdraw. The other is the power to pack up. What do we mean by that? Withdrawal here is not the kind of separation from the world. Withdrawal here is a practice where I turn my attention away from the world to the world within. Because the understanding here is loneliness comes from the lack of love. The lack of love we experience in our relationship in the world. And that becomes problematic because we are separated from our own inner self. By the inner self here, we mean the deepest, innermost self, which is the soul. And in that, the experience of that pure love that is there, that is a part of the human nature, of the human, nature of the human soul, which we refer to as agape. Hence, the other day was speaking about agape. It's a Greek word, A-G-A-P-E. Agape is the experience of pure, selfless love. And the practice of meditation is using the powers to withdraw and back up, to go into the depths of the self. This is genuine introversion that we speak about in spirituality. Going into the depths of the self to connect with that source of pure selfless love. When we experience that, we desire it lesser from the world outside. We desire it lesser from the world outside. We feel lesser disappointed. We don't feel lonely. And secondly, we go beyond the desire. So there are two aspects here. So withdrawal, pack up. I go deep into the experience of the soul, which is the experience of this love which we speak about as agape. When I'm able to experience that, I know, as this experience deepens in me, I know that I can find my stimulation, my inspiration from the inner world. And so when I can feel that fullness from the inner world, I engage with the world, but I'm able to go beyond these attachments and this desire. I'm able to transcend or go beyond.
the desire and attachment that actually binds me to the experience of loneliness, and therefore I'm able to overcome or not feel the experience of loneliness. And we say, if we really, really want to go beyond the experience of separation, which is becoming more and more a part of our daily life in the world, there is a lot of research saying, 10 years ago, when people were asked, how many people can you share things that are important with? The average was 3. 2 years ago, they did it, the same research, the average became 2. In some places, people could find no one they could share important things with. Loneliness has been deeply connected to the experience of modernization. The more modern a society becomes, the deeper the loneliness. It has been connected to media consumption. The more people start consuming media, or in fact, because perhaps of the experience of loneliness, people start consuming more and more in different ways, including media consumption. It is becoming a problem of the world more and more because of the nature of reality, the way we work, the way society is being structured. We come lesser and lesser into contact with each other. People have lesser and lesser time for each other. What do we do? Keep searching for people who can give us time. That is not practical anymore. That is simply not practical. The situations in the world now are actually forcing us in a way to find different ways of addressing this very deep problem of human existence, the problem of loneliness. Existential philosophers like Sartre and Camus, way back, they spoke a lot about this. But they spoke about it from a very nihilistic point of view, that death is eventuality, right? So to overcome the eventuality of nothingness, we try to create meaning. One of the ways in which we try to create meaning is through work and relationships. If we are unable to find that meaning, we feel lonely. But loneliness is a natural aspect of human existence. That is the one way of looking at it. From a spiritual perspective, we say it is not a natural aspect of human existence. It is a natural aspect of the existence of the ego, which means that part of our existence that is situated here, connected to our attachments, connected to our desire, based on the belief that it is only through the outside world that I will experience fullness. Because people don't know how to go deep into the experience of the soul and connect with that pure selfless love. Spirituality here gives us the answer to that. When I can experience that love, but that love has to be expressed through the outer world. When I can express it in the outer world, when I'm experiencing insult from someone, I stay in yoga, I stay united with the experience of my inner love. I can feel that connectedness in spite of the difference in my expectation and that person's behavior. I can continue to feel that love for that person. When I succeed in doing that, my attitude begins to change. Because that experience leads to a change in my belief that yes, even without the experience of respect coming from that person, I can still feel the deep connectedness through the experience of my love. The effect is there. I feel good. I still feel good. In spite of the other person being nasty, I still feel good. My behavior starts changing. One, I realize I don't need to feed on the world. I can go deep inside myself, connect with the self, connect with God, draw on the experience of love and give it to the world. The attitude shifts from that of extroversion to that of introversion. But that requires experience, which changes my belief and my feelings and then my behavior. Without that, it becomes a superficial practice. So the practice of withdrawal and pack up. Withdrawing, I turn my attention away from the world. Pack up. Even after I turn my attention away from the world, what do I do with the thoughts that are running around inside my head? This is the experience of winding up those thoughts. I wind up these thoughts. This is a practice. In meditation, what do? We sit down, separate ourselves from the world and go within. So we are practicing the power to withdraw into the self. Without that, I can't experience the inner nature of the self. I go deep into myself. And then I have thoughts coming from my past experiences. I pack them up.
I remove my consciousness, my awareness from these thoughts, and I focus on the present. I focus on myself as a soul. I go deep within. I connect with God. I experience that deep stillness. This is yoga. But that's not enough. Then I go back into the world, and I face the challenges of the world. I face the challenges of what I call discrimination, cultural differences. Am I practicing my values there? Understanding cultural differences are superficial. This is a belief. Cognitive. So I go out, I get disturbed. Oh, they are different. Who is different and what is different? Who is different and what is different? Are the values of the soul different? No. What is different? It is what people have learned. This understanding helps me transcend the differences. And then I connect. I connect with that person because I can see that the same values are operating in that person, but in a different way. I connect, I go beyond my desire to get something, first of all, and my desire to get something in a certain way. I go beyond that. People say sometimes, here I teach, right? That's most of my work is teaching. So many of my friends who worked outside their home countries, they say, oh, you go to different countries. Students have no respect for their teachers. Respect is a sign of love. Students have no respect for their teachers. Why? Why do you think that happens now? Tell me. They expect respect to be communicated in a certain way. That's the problem. The problem is not that people don't have respect. People have respect and love everywhere. I go back to India, some of you, you stay in Denmark? Yeah, I stay in Denmark. Oh, it must be very tough for you. I said, why? No, we have been to Europe, you know. People don't have love there. You're all loveless people, you know. I say, why do they have love? They say, they don't have time for each other. I was in Sweden once, and when I was there once, I remember, people didn't have time for each other. How do we explain now this problem? I go deep inside and I ask myself, why do people feel they don't have time for each other? In Denmark, for example, why? Yes?
I just said that we have to be independent.
Because one of the things in Denmark is the value of privacy. People want to give each other a lot of privacy, and therefore they don't want to interfere too much. It's a value. That's love. That is love because it is out of concern for the other's individual privacy that people don't want to interfere. People from many other countries, they are used to people coming in, going out all the time. You know, that's the way you ask how you are. You ask everything about your family history and your wife and your children and your grandparents. That's the way you show interest. That's the way you show you communicate love. Here, no, that's, you know, that's your personal life. You don't interfere with that. Unless you get to know someone. And then, of course, you get to know everything about the dates, right? I work with a colleague of mine. So we met a couple of times. Now we have to work together for the next few years, right? We're co-teaching a course. How do you work together for the next few years? I sit and talk to him. He tells me everything about his whole life. Everything. Things I wasn't even expecting. Everything, you know, all his stories. How many wives he has had, and how many children, and how old he is, and you know how the problems he has with his health. And I said, "Wow, this is great! I wasn't even expecting it." But once they feel that it's okay and they can tell you, they tell you a lot, right? People don't understand how these values of love, for example. Students in, they don't respect. Of course they respect. They show respect in a different way. In a country like India, for example, many students will stand up when the professor comes. That's the way they show respect. Right? So I had a colleague from America who came down to my university where I was working in India, all these students standing up. He said, oh, this is terrible, you shouldn't be doing this. This is like, you don't have respect for your, that's his understanding, because it's a difference. It's not about not having respect for the self. That's the way they have learned to express it. Right? These differences, and we go and then we understand that this is, these are just different ways of expressing that same value. You go beyond. But to let go of our assumptions shaped by our personal history, the narrative that we have created for ourselves, to let go. Why do we hold on to all these things, by the way, first of all? Why do we hold on to the stuff that we have learned so tightly that it stops us from connecting with other human beings? Why do we hold on to it?
Makes us feel secure.
Makes us feel secure. Because that is how we have experienced love. And why are we holding on? Makes us feel secure. Why? Because without that, we don't know how to feel secure. We don't know how to feel love. The practice of meditation shows us a way of going beyond all that and still experiencing love without all the stuff we have learned from the world, still experiencing love, pure agape, that pure selfless love from deep inside. When I start experiencing that, then and only then will I be willing to let go of all these attachments to my family history and my culture and my traditions. I can let go. But unless and until I've experienced that pure selfless love, I will still hold on to it. Intellectually, I will understand, but in my heart, I will still hold on to it. I'll be unwilling to let go. And then I create problems for myself in this world of globalization. It is so important now to go beyond these things. If we have to learn to be with others, but also in personal, individual relationships, the same story. I have to go beyond preferences, tastes and preferences. People have different preferences, different ways of expressing. I have to look at the intention behind. You were saying something?
Oh, it was just I'm thinking that maybe this, we're talking about loneliness and you were also talking about self and individualistic. And most people, many people, don't believe in God. So I see a crucial distinction between those who believe as you can reach the spiritual way in a large yoga. You have, in some way, to believe of something bigger.
Yes, I understand. But this belief, this faith, one is blind faith. Right? One is blind faith. The other is the faith that is created through experience. And for experience, sometimes I have to experiment. So when I experiment, I experience. As I experience, it starts deepening my faith, my belief. That is the cognitive part. Through the experience, it starts deepening. So for example, I believe that the Danes don't have any love. They are the most racist people in the world. Very, very discriminating. I don't believe. Imagine, I believe that. Right? And I'm unwilling to believe. Just like I'm willing to believe in God, I'm unwilling to believe in God. So I'm unwilling to believe that Danes have any goodness in them. How will I challenge that? I have to experiment. Go out there, meet them, test that assumption, and I find out, no, they're nice people. They're just like any other people in the world. They behave differently, but deep inside they are, nice people.
But in a deep philosophical way, it can also be that basically, in the existentialistic way, you are afraid of dying.
Very true. But there is also a lot of research that shows that people who have a higher, fear of death, experience meaning lesser in their lives. Very interesting. People who experience meaning have a lower fear of death. Isn't it interesting? People who find relatedness, meaning, purpose in their lives, fear death lesser.
But meaning and feeling that...
In relations, because meaning is in relatedness, purpose is in relatedness. I cannot realize a purpose outside relationships. Purpose is always something that I am contributing to the world. I asked one person one day, I was running a workshop on purpose. So, What is your purpose? To be an advertising executive. Is that a purpose or a goal? That's a goal. That's not a purpose. Purpose, we understand, is our contribution to the world, raison d'être, the reason why we are here. The reason why each soul is here, because we have our own unique contribution to make to the world. That is our purpose. That is something we have been doing, by the way, from the time we were born, from our childhood. Our purpose is that which we have been doing naturally. Our purpose is that the world has been getting from me, from my childhood. Ask each one of you, ask yourselves, what is it that the world has received from me? From the time I was young, very naturally. It's so close you might not be able to see it. That is purpose. And purpose is always in relation. If I am living my purpose, I don't feel lonely. If I am feeling lonely, I am unable to live my purpose. Or I am disconnected with my purpose. I am unable to realize, I am unable to practice that purpose. That's in relation. And in relation there is love. Our purpose is the expression of our love. Because through purpose, we contribute to the world. We contribute to those we love. When we are living our purpose, we are contributing to the world. We are feeling love. So the feeling of love and the expression of that love through our purpose, that is our contribution to the world. There, the world is then not there for me to feed on. The world is there for me to give to. And then I realize my purpose. You conquer the fear of death. Right? But to, yes.
Why do you think then that in Western societies like European and the United States,
yeah,
I would claim nobody talks to very young children in kindergarten about a purpose, and also not in school?
By the way, that's not unique to Western societies. That is there all over the world. I grew up in India. I was taught in India. No teacher ever spoke to me about purpose.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or at least the way they spoke about purpose was, what do you want to become?
Yeah.
That's your purpose. But that's the superficial way of looking at purpose that we have all over the world, because we are so stuck in the world of the ego. We don't know. I can't blame the teachers. They don't know how to go beyond the ego. No one has taught them that. But now we are out of time. So we have to stop and withdraw and pack up. Have a little meditation before we wind up for today. Shall we do that?
Yeah.
5 minutes. Two aspects of yoga. Since this time we will not be able to have talks very regularly, it's something like once a month we have talks because of other things happening. I would propose an exercise for you all. And the exercise would be every day, spend 20 minutes for yourself. 20 minutes going deep, separating yourself from this world of the body, this world through which we have learned all these things, our assumptions, our cultural values, what we believe in, how people should behave, how people should be, because when they are like that, I feel good about myself. People should behave in a certain way, because when they behave like that, I feel good about myself. I feel love. I believe people should behave. Please pay attention to this. I believe people should behave in a certain way, because when they behave in that way, I feel loved. Otherwise, there is no reason for me to expect people to behave in a certain way towards me. It's because I lack love for myself. I want them to behave in a certain way so I can feel love from them, because I lack love for myself. It will liberate us from a lot of suffering. Because my pain from the other's behavior comes because of my lack of love for the self. Having understood this, practice going deep within the self, 20 minutes. Deep within the self, connect with the self as the soul. Connect with God. Go into the depth of pure, selfless love. And then throughout the day, ask yourself, after the meditation of 20 minutes, ask yourself, what is it that I bring to the world?
what is it that I bring to the world? If nothing, very simple. Can I give others the experience of love? And throughout the day, practice that, especially when there are challenging situations. When someone says something to you you don't like, when someone behaves towards you in a way that you don't like, understand, why don't I like that? Because I wanted that person to show behavior that would communicate love to me. That person's behavior is not communicating love, so I'm feeling bad. Why do I want that person's love? Because I like love for myself. Having understood that, go and talk to that person. Right there. You feel bad because of the person's behavior, immediately go and talk to that person. Spend some time with that person. You will find relief for yourself. Simple way of liberating yourself from suffering. You want love? Give love. And then you will get so much love. Then give more. Practice this. Every time you feel that you've been disappointed by someone, hurt by someone, upset because of someone's behavior, immediately, don't do much, just go and talk to that person. That is the expression of selfless love. The moment you do it, you start believing in yourself that I am capable of selfless love. The more you do it, the deeper this belief becomes. Over a period of time, personality transforms. So, that's Hema Bhaiya. Now we will go with it. Letting go of all thoughts. I allow the body and the mind to settle down. Using the power to withdraw. I withdraw myself from all experiences, thoughts of the external world of activities, relationships, responsibilities. This world from which I search, from which I want love, respect. I withdraw from this very world into the depths of the self. I experience my entire existence concentrated. Becoming a point. A speck of consciousness in the center of the brain. The soul, the spirit, the eternal being of love. I experience this body and this physical world disappear, fading into the distance, until all that remains is light. I, the soul, a being of light. myself beyond all limits of this physical world. In that world of light, the world beyond, and I find myself once again in the presence of the Supreme, the presence of God. The eternal source of unlimited, unconditional, selfless love. I bathe in His light. Experiencing a deep state. Beyond desire, nothing to do, nowhere to go, just be. The eternal spirit in the presence of the divine. Holding on to the state of fullness, this deep, silent love, not the love that brings me into emotion and upheaval, but the love of understanding, the love of peace. The love that is expressed through contribution to this world. I allow myself to return back to this physical reality, back to this world, back to this body. Once again seated in the center of the brain, looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears, ready to express my love through my purpose, through my contribution, through respect to the world around me. I, the soul, the being of life, a being of love, a being of peace. Om Shanti.
Thank you. Talk for your day.